Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver, and we are coming to you from high atop the first floor of the MSPR studios in downtown Moorhead, Kentucky. Special welcome to our listeners on True Talk Internet Radio, and we are here to talk about lung cancer and lung cancer screening. That's right, Rick. It's been a few months since we talked about lung cancer, and it is time once again to bring up the scourge of Kentucky and rural Kentucky, lung cancer.
I'm more than ready to talk about it.
It is the single biggest cancer killer, 160,000 deaths in the U.S. every year. That is equal the total of the next four deadliest cancers combined, colorectal, breast, pancreas, and prostate. According to James Jett, he is at the National Jewish Medical Center in Denver at their annual meeting at the American College of Physicians. Lung cancer isn't just a cancer problem, it is the cancer problem. And here to talk about the cancer problem from the University of Kentucky, I have rural physician leadership students who are under my supervision. First, Stacy Bowles. Hi, Stacy.
Hey.
And also Christina Pescasolito. Hi, Christina.
Hello, Dr. Weaver.
And as always, I am joined by my co-medical host, UK service owner for telephony, Rick Phillips. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Tony, you know the title hasn't changed since last week.
All right, so we're still looking at telephony, but we are expecting a big promotion and lots more work in the future for Rick.
Would you put in a good word for me?
I will, okay. I promise. We start off, we had our top 10 glum facts about lung cancer, but I want to remind our listeners of why lung cancer is so serious. First of all, again, the deadliest cancer, by far more deadly than the next four combined, and not really getting any less deadly. From 2001 to 2007, the five-year survival rates. For colon cancer, 65% five-year survival rate. For prostate cancer, 99%, and to the point where it is difficult to make a strong case for aggressively treating most cases of prostate cancer. 89% for breast cancer, 16% for lung cancer.
Wow.
You get lung cancer, you die. That is just simply the facts of the matter. And the reason is very simple. More than three-quarters of lung cancer are diagnosed in advanced stages. If you can get that lung cancer when it is small, when it is localized, your survival rates are up close to 75%. But, again, more than three-quarters of people have advanced disease with a five-year survival less than 5%. And so that is the pervasive situation here, especially in rural Kentucky, that you get lung cancer and you die. And people's outlooks on lung cancer are absolutely grim, and correctly so. Kentucky, of course, leads the nation in our lung cancer incidence and our mortality. We are higher than any other state in the nation. Every year, about 3,300 Kentuckians die from lung cancer.
Wow.
Staggering.
I mean, Tony, I can't even begin to go on about how many people I know who have died of it. At least probably what will go down in history is one of my closest friends ever, you know, died at 51 of lung cancer. I tried for years to get him to quit smoking.
Yeah.
Just couldn't convince him.
Yeah, I had diagnosed a young man who was 32 and had small children. He had advanced stage lung cancer. It was not resectable for a cure. He went to UK for experimental treatment but did not survive. Stacy, I'm wondering, you have relatives, friends with lung cancer?
You know, I don't know that I've had anybody close to me that's been diagnosed, but I have family members that have been long-term smokers that have never been screened, that have been counseled to quit, and they just won't. So I'm sure I'll be experiencing that soon.
Christina, how are things down in Prestonsburg?
In Prestonsburg, I've not been in quite a while, but I imagine it's similar to Stacy's situation. I've had, actually, when I was working for my uncle in a clinic in Richmond, my first patient that I ever walked in the room and taking blood pressure, my first one I ever walked in the room had nodules up through the neck, and that was the first thing that I felt, and come to find out she did have stage 4 lung cancer, so that was shocking for me and kind of depressing for my first patient.
Stage 4 widespread lung cancer. It has a dismal prognosis. And as you mentioned, Stacy, smoking, a primary causative agent to developing lung cancer, we believe that 90% of all lung cancers occur because of cigarette smoking. Now, people have talked about radon. Radon is an issue in developing lung cancer, particularly if you are a uranium miner. In the state of Kentucky, I'm not saying that radon is completely to be discounted, but we have a difficult time showing cases that are primarily due to radon, and it is the second most common cause of lung cancer behind cigarette smoke. In fact, being a smoker is your most common reason for developing lung cancer, and being exposed to someone else's smoke is the second most common reason people develop lung cancer in the state of Kentucky. This brings us to the fact that, again, this secondhand smoke kills people unnecessarily. If you or someone you love in the state of Kentucky develop lung cancer without smoking, that's really an argument for a smoking ban, for a protection of citizens in the state of Kentucky from secondhand smoke, since it occurred so extensively the amount of secondhand smoke, the amount of people that are developing lung cancer and are non-smokers, but they're exposed very extensively to secondhand smoke. So we know that we need a smoking ban. We know that we need to increase our cigarette taxes. We've got to cut down on the nation's highest rates of smoking, but there is something else that we might be able to do. This was reported out in the New England Journal of Medicine, August 2011, the National Lung Screening Trial. They screened smokers with low x-ray dose CAT scans. Now, they took 53,000 people, Rick. They were ages 55 to 74 years old. So these are not young people. And frankly, I think your friend and the man I diagnosed would be too young.
Correct.
To even be screened.
Yep, they would have, 51.
They would be some of the people they couldn't save. 53,000 people ages 55 to 74 years old. They had to smoke at least 30 pack years. That's a pack a day for 30 years. They had no previous history of lung cancer. And some of them, they just gave them an x-ray every year. We've tried giving x-rays every year before. It doesn't work.
Right.
But that was their comparison group. And then they also did, for 3 years, every year they did a CAT scan in 26,000 of these people. And then they collected the data on lung cancers and death from lung cancer. And they went about 5 years after they finished the trial, still following these people to see if they died of lung cancer. Now, the first thing you got to realize, if we do a screening program for lung cancer, 96% of the abnormal scans turn out to be false positive. They're not cancers.
Right.
There are a lot of things that look like cancer on a CT scan that are not. Fortunately, we're getting better at sorting those out, but it's still a problem. 96% of all abnormal lung CAT scans were not cancer. And these are things like, here in Kentucky, histoplasmosis. Pretty much everybody in the state of Kentucky has little spots on their lungs from histoplasmosis because it grows in the dirt here. It's a fungus. So those type of things come up, but they were able to sort those out. And they found that if they did CAT scans every year for 3 years, they could cut your risk of dying of lung cancer in these heavy smokers, 55 to 74 years old, cut your risk of dying of cancer by about 20%.
That's impressive.
That is huge. And you start, again, you apply that to Kentucky's 3,300 people, give or take, that have lung cancer every year, and you start to see some real improvements. Now, keep in mind, our car crash deaths are around 600 to 700. Drug overdoses, we just had very extensive changes in our legislation regarding prescription drugs. That is for around 800 people, less than 1,000 people. We're talking over 3,000 people every year with lung cancer. So we need to make some changes. The other thing, now, maybe you can reduce a person's risk of dying of lung cancer. This is what happened to the prostate cancer people, though, is you're doing all these surgeries, they just die of surgery. Or they die of blood clots from being in the hospital.
Some
or they
complication.
Die of something else. But they found not only could they cut the risk of lung cancer by 20%, but they could also cut your risk of dying overall from any cause by around 7%. So the people actually lived longer who got the screening from the CAT scans. Neat. That was reported August 2011, and yet we still don't have a comprehensive lung cancer screening program. Now, we also did something in the state of Kentucky called the Marty Dreisler Project. This is something that I got involved with.
It was like
working with the University of Kentucky.
Wasn't it like 2005 to 2008 or 9, something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, 2005 to 2008. Very good memory, Rick. Very impressive.
The person who was the research coordinator for that worked for me during that time.
Okay. So you knew. Then from 2005 to 2008, Marty Dreisler was actually here in eastern Kentucky. Now, the national trial used university hospitals and university physicians.
Now, wasn't Marty Dreisler a woman?
Marty Dreisler was the chief of staff of Hal Rogers.
But she was a woman.
She was a woman.
Yes. So not to be confused with I mean, it sounds a little, doesn't sound like a woman's name traditionally, but.
Yeah, but Marty Dreisler died of lung cancer.
Correct.
And Hal Rogers wanted to do something about it. And you made a point there, Rick. Frankly, your risk of dying, if you are a woman smoker, your risk of dying of lung cancer is very close to that of a man. You do not get any protection being a woman whatsoever. So in honor of Marty Dreisler, Hal Rogers got this project funded. And the big difference was it went with local hospitals and local CAT scanners, just the garden variety CAT scanner they have set up in all the hospitals in eastern Kentucky. They went to Highlands Regional in Prestonsburg. They went to Appalachian Regional in Hazard, Lake Cumberland Regional in Somerset, and St. Clair in Moorhead, as well as the University of Kentucky coordinated things. But the actual testing was done in community hospitals. Once again, men ages 55 to 75, more than 40 pack years in our study, as opposed to more than 30 pack years in the national study. And also, we did lung function tests and picked people who had really bad lung function, arguing they were getting damage to their lungs. They invited about 1,000 people. They had lung function testing in about half those, and they narrowed it down to 250 people who had abnormal lung function, heavy smokers, and they screened those. And they found four cases of lung cancer, all four of them at a relatively early stage. Now, we don't have enough people here to say whether or not it saved lives, but we basically, out of 250 people that got CAT scans, we had four cancers detected. So again, 60-plus people screened to pick up one lung cancer.
Yeah, that's I don't know. Seems like, well, I don't know. The screening process has been tough to define, hasn't it? I mean,
yeah.
This is not something that just shows up and just comes out on. I mean, even though we do CT, even though we've shown some efficacy in doing that, it's still not a simple process.
No, we've got a long way to go because we still don't have a way to treat those patients that would be the equivalent of these university hospital treatments that they did nationally. But based on these results, the American Cancer Society has an initial guideline now that says that in a person ages 55 to 74 with at least 30-pack-year smoking history, they should talk to their doctor about getting screened for lung cancer. That was in March of 2013. They came out with that guideline. In May, the American College of Chest Physicians recommended that people who face a significant risk of lung cancer due to age and smoking history, basically these criteria, be offered CT screening. So I think the academic world is starting to come around to the idea of screening.
Right.
Now, let me give you some numbers, and I will show you what it would be like to screen. If you look at breast cancer, a good cancer we can screen for, right? We've had it established. Breast cancer kills 596 Kentuckians every year. And if you screen with mammograms, you're probably going to drop the mortality by around 20% by picking them up early.
Okay.
Colon cancer kills 893 Kentuckians every year. With colonoscopies, you can cut your risk in half. Prostate cancer kills about 400 Kentuckians. You can cut your risk of dying of prostate cancer by 20%, but there are a lot of problems with the treatments, and you die of something else, so it wasn't as clear. Now, lung cancer, keep in mind, kills 3,377, according to the National Cancer Institute, Kentuckians every year. If you cut that risk by 20%, here's what I did. I just got me out a calculator and ran some numbers, okay?
Went back to your old statistics class, huh?
I did. If you increase the rate, let's say we stop screening for breast cancer. The rate of dying of breast cancer goes up by 20%. We lose 119 Kentuckians. Let's say we stop screening for colon cancer. We're going to lose 473 more Kentuckians. Let's say we stop all screening for prostate cancer. We're going to lose 80 more. We're going to lose 672 more Kentuckians if we stop all of our cancer screening programs.
Right.
Let's say we take all that money and put it into screening for lung cancer. We're going to save 675 Kentuckians. This is not a minor issue.
No.
This is, in the words of the man at the National American College of Physicians meeting, this is the cancer issue. And it's time Kentucky got serious about our screening programs. X-rays were actually the comparison group for the national trial. Plain chest X-rays, not going to work. Waiting till you're coughing up blood and losing weight, not going to work. Kentucky has had plenty of experience with that. What we need to do is to put in place a safe statewide protocol to screen for lung cancer.
I need time to ponder.
Why don't you take time to ponder? We're going to take a break and come back with our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. Additional information on the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center is available at 606-783-6506 or online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. You're listening to Health Matters. This is the How Do You Spell Pescosolito Show. I am your host, Radio Health Evangelist Dr. Tony Weaver, and we have special guests on this show. That's the reason why we named the show. As always, if we have a guest, we'll just knuckle under, won't we, Rick?
Yes, we will.
Yes, we will.
Actually, I'll do whatever you say.
From the University of Kentucky College of Medicine Rural Physician Leadership Program, these are first-year medical students, Christina Pescosolito. Hi, Christina.
Hi, Dr. Weaver.
And also Stacey Bowles. Hi, Stacey.
Hey.
And with me, as always, to talk about our web presence and pretty much anything else that is on his mind, the UK service owner for telephony, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know, you can get the audio of the shows at msuradio.com. They're there. They're in MP3 format. You can download them for your listening pleasure anytime you choose. If you like to do podcasts, there's a link there on the MSU Radio website that you can get to iTunes and grab that podcast. Maybe you want to burn them on a DVD. Maybe you want to send them out. Get your Christmas shopping done early. Download a bunch of them. Put them on a DVD. Put a pretty little label on it. Ship them off to that loved one.
Rick, did I tell you about my sister-in-law?
No, you didn't.
Okay. One year, we got some very nice placemats, and it turned out they live just off I-40. It turned out a Walmart truck had wrecked on I-40.
And dropped them off?
And
nice. Because you care enough to send the very best.
I'm telling you, this is how it works. But yeah, if you can't get placemats, if there's nothing on the side of the interstate, Health Matters makes an excellent Christmas gift.
Think about it, Tony. You never, ever, ever in your life thought you might possibly be a Christmas present.
I've tried. It didn't work well.
So, we got the audio of the show, msuradio.com. If you want to read about the show, go to Facebook. That is facebook.com. You can put in /HM Radio Show. Do a search for Health Matters Radio Show. There's tons of ways to find us on Facebook. Go out there. We ask you to like the page. Look there for comments. Look for feedback. There's all kinds of cool things at facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
Our sponsor for today's show, the top nine, Rick.
Hey, nice.
Nine glum facts about lung cancer. We'll start with number one. It's the leading cause of death from any cancer. More people dying from lung cancer than from colon, breast, or prostate cancer combined. That's the next three deadliest cancers. Reminding you from the last fractional portion from 2001, 2007, five-year survival rates. Colon cancer, 65% five-year survival. Prostate cancer, 99%. Breast cancer, 89%. Lung cancer, 16%. That leads to our next glum fact. More than three-quarters of lung cancer is diagnosed in advanced stages, and that's why we cannot get survival any higher. Kentucky leads the nation. The highest lung cancer incidence, that is, we have more lung cancers than any other state, and we have more people dying of lung cancer than any state. In 2013, we expect over 3,300 Kentuckians to die from lung cancer. That's five of our nine. We'll get to the rest of them in our next fractional portion. Our sponsor, the top nine glum facts about lung cancer. Now, we had, again, Christina and Stacy are nice enough to come and sit in as a part of a summer experience they were having, and so I invited them to the radio show. And I want our radio fans to understand the Rural Physician Leadership Program. We're looking for students from rural Kentucky who meet UK's academic standards and also have a heart and a passion for rural medical practice. They get to spend their third and fourth years entirely at St. Clair and sites here in rural Kentucky getting their education if they desire to do so. And they also, these two young ladies, decided they wanted to come over during the summer of their first year to learn a little bit more about medical care in Moorhead. Now, Christina, you are from Prestonsburg.
Prestonsburg, but I've lived all over the state.
Really? Yes. That's right. Your dad is a minister.
Maysville, Richmond, Adair County right now, so we've been all over.
Where was the best place? Where did you feel the most at home?
Prestonsburg is my home. I still tell people it's my home. I spent the most time there, and that's really where all my friends were and where I went to high school, so where I grew up.
And you are sparking a young Prestonsburg man, is that correct?
A young Salyersville man.
Oh,
so
I
switched counties. I got rebellious, so that's what happens.
When did you decide, Christina, that you wanted to be a doctor?
I always kind of knew, and I kind of fought it for a little while. I wanted to be a musician, which everyone has those kind of other passions. That mine, I turned it into more of a hobby, and so it remains a hobby. And I kind of decided when I was 18, after I looked into a few different options, and I realized I wanted to be useful. I wanted to be useful to the people that needed me, what I felt like was the most. And with my dad being a minister, I saw lots of sick people. So basically just wanting to know more about their conditions, wanting to be able to do more, that's really what drove me to pursue this very long educational path of becoming a doctor.
This message from Health Matters, musicians are really not useful people.
No, we're useful.
That
came out wrong now. That's not really what I meant.
She did sing to people in the hospital when she was younger.
Yeah, I did. I played my violin to nursing homes. I went around with it. It's a very useful therapeutic pathway as well. It just isn't the only one I wanted to pursue.
Now, you are thinking that you'll continue to play music.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because how many years did you take violin?
15 years.
Yeah. So you've got a serious investment there, and that should pay off for your patients and also the people in the community, wherever you and this young man from Salyersville wind up.
I hope so. I hope my patients like my fiddle playing. That's all I've got to say.
Yeah. Tell me where you see yourself ending up. What's your career plans?
We are very open to any rural community at this point. We have family in several places, so it's probably not the fairest to settle down in one. But I like Eastern Kentucky. I've always liked Eastern Kentucky. I'm starting to fall in love with Adair County. It's beautiful as well. I know you are looking at me. I know.
I know Adair County.
It's beautiful.
I will give you that. It is a nice place to live as well.
I just like being in Kentucky. There's no place like being home after you travel. So I think I'm stuck here, not in Lexington. I don't need that many people around me every day.
Fair enough. Stacy, you are from Mount Washington.
I am. I am a Bullitt County girl.
And grew up on a farm.
Kind of grew up on a farm. I lived in a neighborhood, so I did grow up in a subdivision, but we have always been on the farm. There's not a day I don't remember not owning a horse. So we've had anywhere from 3 to up to now 25 horses. And at the moment, my family and I own a farm in Nelson County.
What does one do with 25 horses?
You feed and muck a lot of stalls. It's a 24-hour job.
I can see that, but is there... He is breeding, I guess. Your family's breeding these horses.
We did. We have stopped our breeding operation. Our stud did pass away last year, so we have stopped breeding for a little bit until we kind of get the numbers down. But we are raising. We raise all our babies on the farm until they're about 3. Then we send them for more training once we can't do any more, and then they either get sold or they come back to us to show. So we do a lot of amateur training.
What kind of horses are these?
They're saddlebreds, American saddlebreds.
Okay, yeah, I have a saddlebred who's a large dog.
That's how most of them are.
Lonely.
Yeah.
Does he need a friend?
Several friends.
Okay. Yeah, well, we could probably make some arrangements. Now Stacy got my attention. First of all, Stacy, I got to ask you, as I asked Christina, what then led you to a career in medicine?
Well, you know, I can't pinpoint anything specifically, but I have always been interested in the human body, especially in middle school. We had a really cool seventh grade teacher that brought in a deer heart and let us run water through it. So, of course, that was amazing as a seventh grader. And then I took anatomy in high school and just fell in love. And I think that's kind of when it solidified that healthcare was something I wanted to do. I just wanted to know more. I've always kind of been that helping person. Of course, everybody thought when I was little I wanted to be a vet. And I always wanted to help animals, and I was really always into the YMCA and helping kids that way. And so this was just a great path for me to be able to help the community in a different way and continue to be a leader and still have my love for the human body.
You know, we've seen, this is just a message to parents and grandparents out there, we've seen a lot of people that will switch from veterinary medicine to human medicine as they're farther along in their career. So something to think about if some young person you really are attached to likes veterinary medicine. Keep that in mind. Healthcare is a possibility as well. Now, Stacy, things get a little wild sometimes on the farm.
a little wild.
Told me. Let me just set this up. We reported, this radio show and other outlets reported back in June 2012 about the dangers of spray-on sunscreen. There was a Massachusetts man named Brett Sigworth. He had severe burns on his chest, ear, and his back. He had sprayed himself with banana boat sunscreen, walked over to his grill, and he caught himself on fire. They reported that this banana boat then must be flammable, and you should not use banana boat sunscreen around fires. Now, I'm reading here from the New York Times health blog saying spray sunblock poses no fire risk. And this is what they say. The New York Times says sunscreen is not flammable, but like hairsprays, spray deodorants, insecticides, paints, and other products that can be sprayed out of a can or bottle, sunscreen can become flammable when it's used in aerosol form. The thing is, the sprays have alcohol in them, and they're alcohol vapors, and that's what catches fire. The sunscreen itself or the insecticide itself doesn't. Now, Stacy told me of a, I guess, something you do for fun, apparently.
Well, I never did it for fun.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, well, like you said, things get a little crazy on the farm and in small towns. And a friend of mine, when we were in high school, he was a boy, and the other boys in our group decided that it would be fun to spray his back with bug spray and light him on fire just to watch it burn, and then he would jump in a pool. So they would stand him up. Yes.
Now, Rick.
Yes.
Do you have a comment?
Quite a face.
You're just going to leave that shocked look.
Well, I am certain the radio audience cannot see the expression on my face right now, but it is one of sheer, I'm not even sure what it is.
Shock and awe.
Well, let's stop here for a moment. Fortunately,
there are many words to describe it.
Our listeners are sensible people, and they know that Health Matters is not recommending that you set yourself on fire.
How many car crashes did we just cause?
Yeah. So, again, to understand, you would spray your back with bug spray.
Yes.
And then immediately, as soon as you finish spraying, you would light a match, and poof, there were these.
Did somebody tell them that the bug spray works okay if you don't light it on fire?
Well,
either way, it'll keep the bugs off.
Yeah, the bugs have no chance against burning bug spray.
I mean, either way will work, but one way is less toxic.
Right.
Yeah, so this, I guess, a flash fire, just this flame spread across
the back. Kind of what you would see if you sprayed hairspray on the counter and lit it. It's,
okay, and then they would jump into the pond, the pool, or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was just a, you know, so we could take a quick picture, and it was funny, and we'd laugh, and then they'd do it again.
Now, was the fire out before they hit the water, or they had to hit the water to extinguish the flames?
He had always hit the water before the fire was out. I won't say that it hadn't, like it was, it needed to be out by the water, but.
Now, keep in mind, we're talking then, according to the New York Times, we're talking about the vapors in the spray. You're saying this man was in flames when he hit the water.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you would think, okay, if this is a vapor thing, I would not expect him to be in flames.
Right.
But the story gets better, Rick.
I'm listening.
Yes, it's not over. So they had done this a couple times and it was really cool. But he got jealous because he hadn't seen the fire, and he really wanted to see it. So what they did was they sprayed his back with bug spray, and then they sprayed his chest with bug spray. Then they resprayed his back with bug spray, so there was just enough, lit him on fire, and he waited for the flame to come around to his chest so that he could see it before he jumped in the water. Yes, I know. Not very smart.
You know, I'm going to say, I'm going to say something here. How old?
We were 17, 18, high school.
In every sense of the word, well, actually, I shouldn't say that. It's probably pretty brave. But as I say, after you get done with this, there is no hair on that chest whatsoever.
No, I think that's one thing we can definitely say.
Yes, we can definitely say.
And it saves money on a wax job, I guess.
Yeah, so what happened again to this young man?
Yeah, so the issue was this time he had waited, you know, it had been on his skin for long enough that it actually burned his back. And he ended up with third-degree burns on his back and had to go to the hospital. Because he'd let it soak in. Because the other times it was fine, but it was just on his back for long enough.
Now, keep in mind, the New York Times hypothesis is, if you wait long enough, it won't be flammable at all.
Right.
Your friend's experience was, if you spray yourself with bug spray and you light a match, the longer you wait, the worse the burns were. Now, keep in mind, he waited... Oh, no, I can't make this...
Less than a minute, I'd say.
Yeah, he was trying to get the flames to go around to the front.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I cannot see, Rick, that from the propellant. First of all, I will tell you, Stacey, I looked at the literature, the medical literature. There are no case reports of burns, particularly third-degree burns, from insecticide, from insect sprays, from insect repellents.
Right.
There are none, zero, in the literature. I think your friend is the only person I know of in the civilized world who has burned himself from applying insecticide. Admittedly, he had to work pretty hard at it, but we have seen, you have to admit, Rick, we have seen some strange things. You may remember there was
this might be top 10.
Yeah. There was a young woman who held a spray deodorant can to her wrist from a few inches away and got frostbite. Again, the expanded gases cool the skin down. And so we have gotten frostbite from deodorant spray, but we have not gotten burns from insecticide. And I think, again, in
reference... But Tony, I mean, honestly, how many things have we put on here where somebody got something from stupidity?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. It just depends on how you categorize this one.
Right. But this is a different flavor of stupid, is what I'm saying, that I have never seen before. And to me, it calls into question.
This is ingenious stupidity?
Well, I just think the idea that you don't need to worry about these products. I mean, this is insecticide. You don't need to worry about these products. The only danger is spraying into an open flame. They had stopped spraying when he lit.
Yes. Yeah. 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 It was not into an open flame. It was directly on his back.
They lit his back, and he got third-degree burns on his back, and there was, at the time, no spray occurring. And his back had actually, again, the difference that you're postulating is that he waited longer, but also that he'd had his back double-dosed.
Right.
This does not make me feel that spray-on insecticides, spray-on sunscreens are necessarily safe after you quit spraying.
I mean, honestly, though, how many crazy things have you read on a box or a piece of paper that's a warning that comes with a toaster about how not to use it in the bathtub?
Right.
This guy created more paperwork for the insecticide companies.
Right. It's a whole new category of stupid in my
mind. They're going to have to add 2 ounces to the bottle so they can create more space to put the stupid disclaimer on.
Right. But I think to our radio fans, you've got to realize when you spray something on, there is a propellant. But just because you stop spraying doesn't mean that the risk is gone. And so I'm going to go back to Brett Sigworth and his sunscreen, and I'm going to say I don't think that this was necessarily the spray. I still think there might be a problem. Certainly, your experience, there was a problem. He was, I guess, he went to the hospital with his third-degree burns.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure they told him that it was from the insecticide, but yes, right. He went to the hospital. We took him to the ER.
But I mean, the problem here is they actually lit it intentionally on fire. It didn't just catch a spark. Somebody was allowed to just say, pick up a cigarette, hold the cigarette out in front of them, and there was some way that that would actually cause sunscreen to ignite or insecticide to ignite, that would be, you know, they lit it on fire.
So you lit a match and it just poof, it ignited immediately, or did you have to hold a match to the insecticide? I know this is tough because this was several years ago.
But. I mean, it was a stick lighter, like the long stick lighters, and it was just spray, and then they went away, and he poofed, and he was on fire. It wasn't, it wasn't like a drag the match.
It's funny every time I listen to it.
We're just sitting there. You know, this is the second health condition we've introduced on Health Matters. You may remember the lawn comments,
the
riding mowers that would catch fire because people would push leaves with them due to a design flaw in the riding mower. But we also, I think now we've got yet another way to injure yourself that we had not even considered before I met Stacy.
Now I know why I don't use insecticide or, propellant. They don't bother me.
Basically, you're too full to worry about the mosquitoes, and then the mosquitoes are much too full to worry about.
Now there's a burn hazard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not going to take that risk.
Fair enough.
I usually don't let people get around me with open flames either, though. I usually try to stay away from the open flame.
I think it's, once again, we've come to a break point. It is time to ponder. It is time to ponder.
I'm going
to
need a little longer on this one.
The mechanics of screening for lung cancer. It is time to ponder the ways that you can set yourself on fire in rural Kentucky. We're going to take a break. Why don't you come back for our third and final fractional portion? You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. Additional information on the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center is available at 606-783-6506 or online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the How Do You Spell Pescosolito show. A question I was asking myself just earlier today. How do you spell Pescosolito? The reason, because from the University of Kentucky, we have as our special guest two Rural Physician Leadership Program students. These are first-year medical students on the way to achieving their MD degree and people who happen to like living and possibly working in rural Kentucky. First of all, from Prestonsburg, Christina Pescosolito. Hi, Christina.
Hey.
And also from Mount Washington, Kentucky, by way of, the Fire Safety Center there in Mount Washington is Stacy Bowles. Hi, Stacy.
Hi.
Our sponsor for the last time, lung cancer screening and our glum facts. Just to remind you, lung cancer, the leading cause of death from any cancer. More people die of lung cancer than from colon, breast, and prostate cancers combined. The abysmal five-year survival rates, we have 65% for colon cancer, 99% for prostate cancer, 89% for breast cancer, 16% for lung cancer. The reason? More than three-quarters of lung cancers are diagnosed in advanced stages, and the five-year survival rates are terrible. Kentucky leads the nation. The highest lung cancer incidence, that is, we have more lung cancer than any other state and more people dying of lung cancer than any other state. Every single county in the state of Kentucky is above the national average for lung cancer incidence and mortality. And we are not really moving very far off our leading edge. In 2013, more than 3,300 Kentuckians will die from lung cancer. We believe smoking is the primary reason people get lung cancer. 90% of lung cancer cases can be related back to smoking. Smoking is also the second leading cause of lung cancer because those who don't smoke have to breathe other people's smoke. And if a non-smoker dies of lung cancer, in most cases, it will be because of smoke exposure to other people's smoke. Kentucky needs a statewide indoor smoking ban, no doubt about it. And remember, if you or someone you love has been smoking for more than 30 years, has quit less than 15 years ago, is age 55 to 74, they should consider being screened with low-dose CT scans. This is the recommendation of the American Cancer Society. This is the recommendation of the American College of Chest Physicians. That's our sponsor, Glum Facts, about lung cancer, but perhaps we can do something about it by reducing our smoking rates and screening those at high risk. Now, we talked some last time about a lot of things, Rick, really.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Setting yourself on fire.
I'm going to have nightmares after that last segment.
But we want to prepare our radio fans for summer. During 1999 through 2009, according to the CDC, there were an average of 658 heat-related deaths every year in the United States. Most frequently among males. There's a big surprise, right, Stacy? Guys having problems with heat.
Yeah. They just can't stay away from it.
and in this case, most commonly among adults over age 65.
You know, we'll never, ever get any credit, Tony, ever. We do these things. We do all of this stuff for women, either to try to woo them or to try to impress them.
I like the wooing part. I think we woo women.
Absolutely.
Flaming back.
That's why they call them woo men.
Exactly. We'll go to the extent of setting ourselves on fire so that we can impress a woman.
You see this? You see these flames?
You know, I've never had a man do that for me.
If that just happens to backfire, maybe we'll meet somebody in the hospital.
I do use the term backfire. I love that, Rick. Almost all heat-related deaths, May through September. So we are now in heat season. Heat-related deaths are preventable, and the big thing is we should have a heat response. And what they did, they actually looked at 2012 in one of the journals of the CDC. On June 29, 2012, I don't know if you remember this or not, Rick, a rapidly moving line of intense thunderstorms with high winds swept across Midwestern and Eastern United States. Widespread damage, power outages of about 3.8 million people, lasted 8 days in some areas. Okay. You remember those storms? That was a horrendous... I lost several trees on my farm from those storms.
Yeah, I did. I didn't. You know what? That was one that was fairly gentle. I mean, it wasn't as bad on me. I didn't lose that many.
From June 30th through July 13th, that was basically for the 2 weeks after the storm, there was extreme heat in Maryland, Ohio, Virginia, and West Virginia. Average daily temperatures 83 to 104 degrees, about 10 degrees above normal for these areas. That caused 32 heat-related deaths. And the average for that area, the average number of heat-related deaths was about 8. They lost 32 people in those 2 weeks. Of the 32 people who died, half of them were over age 65. 72% were male, 75% unmarried or living alone. They often had underlying chronic conditions, and at least 22% of the deaths, 7 of them, loss of power from the storms was a contributing factor. So this tells us, you know, if you or someone you love loses power during a storm in the summer, be very careful. Make sure you check up on that person. Make sure they have what they need to take care of themselves. Access to someplace, school, lots of hydration, or they could become a statistic. Overall, 2/3 of these people died at home, lack of air conditioning, and 91% of those home deaths. 5 of the people who died, a functioning air conditioner was present but not turned on. Do you know people like that, Rick? My best friend's mother did not like air conditioning. She was always cold. She was in her 80s, and she had that house. The temperature was in the mid to upper 90s on most summer days.
Can't do it.
Yeah, no, I can't do it. But
my dad lives at 85, and I about die.
Yeah.
Yeah, my in-laws used to keep it up, high 70s, you know. But most homes that I've been into that have done that, it's not necessarily been because they like it as much as they get used to it as a cost savings measure. I mean, sometimes cooling a big home is not easy. It's not cheap either.
Now, again, they lost 32 in 2 weeks. If you look back, 1993 in Philadelphia, they lost 118 people due to heat. The problem is it's sort of diffuse. So you see a tornado kills 20 people, and that's a disaster. But heat can kill hundreds of people across a large region, and we can't quite wrap our minds around the extent of the tragedy.
Well, interestingly enough, though, Tony, I would make it this analogy. You know, the heat being, you know, when you look at it, it's kind of the same way, or as it relates to, you know, overall weather problems, so does the flu to, you know, human death. I mean, the flu takes more humans. We don't really make a big... I hate to say a big fuss over it, but I mean, what about 5,000 a year we lose to the flu?
We'll lose thousands, tens of thousands a
year. But I'm saying, you know, we kind of equate that to, you know, you don't realize it. Now, most medical professionals understand the ramifications of flu, but I'm not suggesting that. But what I'm saying is, as a typical person, you don't realize flu's deadly.
I hear you. Yeah.
So the same as the heat. We look at the heat and we go, hmm.
Well, in this case, again, without electrical power, they lost 32 in 2 weeks. And again, before 118 in 1993, 514 in Chicago in 1995. And why were they able to limit it to 32? Well, there were a lot of things that they did. One of the things, they looked for high concentrations of power outages in older residents. So they looked at the older residents' neighborhood. In Ohio, the National Guard visited people to talk about heat exhaustion and hydration. And they launched a Check Your Neighbor campaign on July 2nd of last year. Their Department of Aging enlisted the assistance of university and college students as a part of Knock and Talk to go talk to the elderly. West Virginia also had National Guard visits. And in Maryland, if you have an assisted living facility with elderly people in, you have to have a backup generator. So there's some things that you can do. I think the big thing, though, is when the power is out or when the temperature is about 10 degrees above normal, that's the time to check on your senior citizen friends, especially those over age 65, especially those who are men, especially those living alone, because they tend to, as you said, Stacey, they like it hot, and they don't take care of themselves, and they may not be aware that they're about to have a heat-related medical complication.
When you're at that age, even small things like taking the trash out in the heat can be overexertion. And I don't think a lot of people think about that.
Ask Tony how far his driveway is.
Oh, we've seen.
So it is. It's a long trip. But I think you're right. It doesn't take very long to get into trouble. And especially if you do not have a cool place to retire and kind of refresh yourself, that can be tricky. So these power outages, these summer power outages, can be a major problem besides just keeping your food from spoiling. They can actually be a very significant heat-related problem. Moving on, this is one, Rick, I have an idea for the state of Kentucky here. This was reported at the European Atherosclerosis Society 2013 Congress. A guy named Dr. Adrian Brady at the University of Glasgow in Scotland. He noticed, and see if this doesn't ring a bell, most community-funded fitness programs were targeted to women. If you think about in Moorhead, Zumba. My wife, there is almost a Zumba class meeting every single day of the week that she could attend, right?
Probably.
All right.
Although I will say, Tony, I'm not as versed in Zumba as you. You live in
Zumbaland.
Zumbaland, yeah. Yeah. I just have to read about it on Facebook.
All right. So let me ask you, have you participated in some kind of a group event, Stacey?
Both of them are nodding their head.
Oh, yeah. We've both done Zumba.
Yeah, Zumba. We've done
kickboxing. Yeah. I've done kickboxing.
Yeah, cycling clubs. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cycling's a big win.
He said in Scotland, they have their program for like thighs, tums, and bums, which I like, tums and bums. Again, it's you know, I would not go to a Tums and Bums class.
I tell you what, I think we should have these ladies back on the show after they've done Flaming Zumba.
Flaming Zumba.
Come talk to me when you've done Flaming Zumba.
It colors everything. So, but his point was, men had nowhere to go. If you look at health classes, fitness classes, they wouldn't dream of going there. They'd be too embarrassed. So this is what he did, and pay close attention to this. There were two local professional soccer teams, the Celtics and the Rangers. They contacted their season ticket holders, and they also put advertisements in their fan magazines. And they invited men to sign up for a 10-week program. It started with regular exercise 3 to 4 times a week, plus a weekly seminar that had an hour-long health discussion. Gee whiz, that's health matters, Rick. An hour-long health discussion and an hour of exercise.
Well,
now, here's the thing.
We're an hour-long show. That doesn't mean we're actually discussing health.
True. We get sidetracked.
Just a little.
But I'm sure they weren't, you know, on target the whole time. But here's the thing. This is the crucial thing. These sessions that Dr. Brady supervised were conducted by the professional coaching staff from the soccer clubs themselves. They were held at the home stadiums of the two teams. Now, can you imagine? Unfortunately, it's going to be hard to do here in Kentucky. We don't have an athletic team or athletic teams that our men seem to care anything about.
If we could only find one that they could just really get behind.
I mean, if they liked UK,
yeah,
maybe that would work.
If they just liked UK.
Now, here's the fascinating part. They were hoping to get 20 men for each soccer team. They got 5,000 replies.
Wow.
Again, come and work out.
For soccer?
Yes.
Oh, soccer's a big thing over there.
Yeah, I know.
That's like our basketball and football.
Yeah, but imagine, I mean, if John Calipari put out an advertisement that says, you can come work out with the coaches and talk fitness with the coaches, I need about 20 people. How many people do you think he would get?
It'd be a lot.
They published 15-month findings from the study in 2010. The average cholesterol and weight dropped during the 10 weeks of intervention and remained lower out to 15 months follow-up.
Wow.
8% for their cholesterol, 5% for their weight. No drugs. The study had 100% attendance.
Nice.
Don't want to miss a day.
Yeah.
So he comes back in 2013 to this European Atherosclerosis group, and he says this program is sustainable. They are about to publish data. Now, 4 years after finishing the study, the weight has gone down in more in some than others, but maintenance of exercise in a high percentage of these people that exercise with the coaches. Many of them tell us it's the best thing they've ever done in their whole lives. That sentence comes up about once a week in their follow-up interviews. Now, they're figuring their population in Scotland is 5.5 million. They're not particularly healthy people. They think that they could cut down 1,000 fatal heart attacks every year and not on fatal heart attacks by 2,500. And again, Kentucky's 4 million. They're 5.5 million. I'm sure we would save, if their numbers are correct, we would be looking at over 500 fatal heart attacks a year simply by putting a program together that would be similar to the one they did in Scotland.
Not if we chose soccer.
No.
Probably. But, you know, we've got a basketball team. We've got an up-and-coming football team. So there's some sports.
There are a lot of exercise with the coaches that could be done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is a chance to take this sports crazy state and use that for good.
Are you? Never mind.
What? Is my back on fire? No. I am serious about this, Rick.
I think there would be a lot of people that would show up. But then again, if they knew the whole point was to exercise, I'm not sure they would.
I think, again, if you had your beloved athletics coach leading
you in exercise. What's Kentucky's obesity rate compared to the nation?
Yeah, we're number seven.
Yeah, in another state, you might be on to something. This state, we don't put a lot of emphasis on exercise as it is. So,
but I think that's the point in Scotland, too, is that they didn't either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
Scotland and
it gives
Kentucky,
you a blueprint, though.
Really.
How do you design a program for men? I think that's the thing.
Obviously being competitive is the first step.
Yeah.
Men work harder when they're being competitive. If there's a prize or they're trying to impress a woman, it gets even worse.
And if they're trying to impress a basketball coach.
Yeah.
Men will do a lot of stuff to impress a basketball
Maybe.
Coach. You know that.
Yeah, I guess they will.
Yeah.
I just don't want to believe that in my heart.
Well, I think it gives an opportunity. This again, I think both the UK and the University of Louisville basketball team, let's act like we're a statewide radio program. Both of those teams, the coaches are well thought of within their fan base.
Absolutely.
And if they're
both very good coaches.
And
yes.
If coaches offered a program where you would be able to spend some face time with them, but in exchange you'd have to exercise, I think there would be a large number of people who would be willing to do that.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right. I mean, I'm sure you are. But I think what would happen is they would come out the first day, and then once they did the exercise and realized they don't like exercise, they'd just go back to watching it on TV.
You're so cynical.
No, I am.
Honestly,
Tony,
how long have we been at this whole exercise kick? How many years have we been on? 10 years?
10 years.
Have we
yeah.
seen a noticeable change in the obesity rates?
No, because we didn't get the right people involved. That's my point. Because people will sit there in the stadium after the game's over for an hour just to listen to what he had to say. And if you notice, he says the same thing every time.
No, I've never listened to it, actually. I don't know what he says.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, he says, how about this guy? You know, it's Bill this game. How about Bill? Well, Bill is, he's upped his game. He's doing what we ask him to do. Bill is an example to America's youth. Just a perfect basketball player we need. How about Bill? And you think, that's great, but I didn't need to wait after the game. I could have gone and I've been out the car by now. But people will sit there and listen to that.
Yeah,
and I think
yeah.
if he actually said something worthwhile about health or if he had invited you to exercise and you got to be close to him, I think there'd be no doubt.
But you don't think that you really don't think that after a number of visits that it would wear off?
I think we got to try it. Just like lung cancer screening, exercise with the coach is something we have to try here in Kentucky. That's all.
Set it up. You know, we may not be able to get the coach, but we can get a radio talk show host. So you could have exercise with Tony. We could see how that goes.
It could be our trial run, right?
Yeah, that would be guaranteed to fail.
Hey, if more than 20 people show, we won't set your back on fire.
I've got to say thanks anyway to our visiting RPLP students, Stacy Bowles and Christina Pesca-Salido. Rick, can you get us out of here?
Sure can. Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Asa Hosoda and Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to msuradio.com or visit us on Facebook. Just look for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember,
Health Matters is a once-weekly prescription radio show that, along with diet and exercise, helps lower blood sugar levels in adults with type 2 diabetes.
Now, if you've had pancreatitis or inflammation of the pancreas, it is not known if you have a higher chance of getting it while listening to Health Matters.
Serious side effects can happen in people who listen to Health Matters, including pancreatitis, which may be severe and lead to death. Before you listen to our show, tell your doctor if you've ever had pancreatitis.
Stop listening to Health Matters and call your doctor right away if you have pain in your stomach area that is severe and will not go away. The pain may be felt going from your abdomen through to your back. The pain may happen with or without vomiting. These may be symptoms of pancreatitis.
Kidney problems, sometimes requiring dialysis, have been reported. If you listen to Health Matters with another radio show that can cause low blood sugar, such as The Front Page, your risk of getting low blood sugar is higher. The dose of other shows may need to be lowered while you listen to Health Matters.
Signs and symptoms of low blood sugar include headache, drowsiness, weakness, confusion, irritability, and sweating.
Your doctor may do blood tests before and during treatment with Health Matters to see how well your kidneys are working. Based on these results, your doctor may change your dose of Health Matters. The most common side effects of Health Matters are upper respiratory tract infection, stuffy or runny nose, sore throat, and headache.
Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for our exciting series on the health benefits of procrastination on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. Additional information available online at neahec.org.